adapted. But now chimneys are threatened too. We just don't build great big brick chimneys anymore. And many older chimneys are being lost to redevelopment. Here at the Chapman School, Portland Audubon and the community organized and raised money to save their neighborhood chimney. They love their Swifts. Watch a video of migrating Swifts at Chapman School at our website. With special thanks to Gordon Oriens.
Please stay tuned for more great programming here on KPFT Houston. And don't forget that radio like this is made possible by listeners like you.
My guest is Evelyn Merz of the Conservation Committee, Chair of the Houston Regional Chapter of the Sierra Club. And we're going to be talking today about drainage, flood control. Houston is basically flat. It is recorded as having an elevation of about 43 feet above sea level in the vicinity of downtown. The heights are about 25 feet higher. Kind of takes the air out of your lungs at that height. This makes for very slow runoff when there are sudden inflows of water, whether from local rain or water from higher up in the regional watershed, which is really much bigger than most people realize. Since the 1930s, the channeling of water, which we often call flood control, has been a significant part of life in Metro Houston. There were catastrophic floods in the Metro Houston area in the 1930s, and that served as a wake-up call. Houston, over the decades, has subsided, expanded, developed, and we have more water-permeable land that has been paved over. Paved roads have effectively turned into either channels or basins for water looking for places to go. And this has created human habitation, human modification of the environment, has created an endless need for flood control infrastructure, and for human meddling with the local bayous, which are nature's original means of draining this region. The reason I have Evelyn here today is there are a number of projects that are either being conducted or examined for potential construction along Buffalo Bayou. And there is one section that I think they have moved further along in the process around Memorial Park. And then there's another stretch near I-10 and Eldridge called Terry Hershey Park that we'll also be talking about.
Yes.
So, Evelyn, thanks for coming by. Okay. The Harris County Flood Control District has proposed a demonstration project called the Memorial Park Demonstration Project on Buffalo Bayou. It's a 1.5-mile segment beginning near in Memorial Park near the South Picnic Loop and ending near the Hog Bird Sanctuary. Can you tell me a little about the location, the geography, and in a way that people who probably mostly drive around that area might understand?
Okay. if you know where Bayou Bend is, the museum that was given by the Maasai Mohawk, there is an exit basically just a little bit east of Memorial Park, off of Memorial Drive, where you could turn into a parking lot for Bayou Bend. If you went into that that road and you went to the parking lot for Bayou Bend all the way at the very, very back, the far corner, and you walked into the woods right there, you would go into the basically the far end of the Hogbird Sanctuary.
So basically, it's something you're not typically going to see from the road. It will be, in a sense, depending on your point of view, some people might consider it invisible damage, but damage nonetheless.
Well, basically, some of the best habitat is where people don't go.
And the reason it's good habitat is because people don't go there.
That's right. But it doesn't mean that it's not important, I think, in the long-term interest of the people of Houston, because the most people do love to have green space. They love to have wildlife. Many people enjoy bird watching. And actually, the Hog Bird Sanctuary, as you could imagine from its name, is a very nice haven, as is, of course, the rest of Memorial Park, the wilder parts for wildlife in Houston. And it's an area that, of course, has been abused over time. But this is where the end of the Memorial Park demonstration project on Buffalo Bayou would end. And the South Picnic Loop, I think people are probably more familiar with that. And that is basically upstream. It's also easily accessible off of Memorial Drive. But the project itself would impact, of course, both sides of the bayou. Although the south side of the bayou is, in a large stretch of it, is the River Oaks Country Club. Everything on the, pretty much on the north side is all public land.
Now, there are, I'm sure, a lot of different thoughts on what's necessary and desirable and where the balance strikes. I think, and I don't mean to offend anybody when I say this, but I think that it has a certain amount of truth to it. I think that when you're more liberal, you probably favor environmentalism as simply the concept of it is worthwhile. It's something worth doing because it feels nice, it looks nice, it's nice to know it's there if you want to visit it, and if nothing else, the animal life there has just as much right to live as anybody else. I think when you get to the more conservative side of the ideological spectrum, it's more about what good does it do? So let's talk a little about what is the value. I mean, I'm not necessarily talking about intrinsic economic value, mm-hmm. but things like wetlands do help with flood control. They do help with erosion. They do. I mean, so what kinds of functions does this land serve aside from the beauty of habitat?
Well, the conservative and liberal thing, you know, let's face it, some of the major figures in the Republican Party were very, shall we say, for their time, environmentally aware. We probably might think of them as being the very best today, but let's face it, it was a different time back in the early 1900s than it is today.
Roosevelt today would be a liberal Democrat.
He probably would, and they might kick him out of the Republican Party.
They didn't like him then either.
Yes. And but you're saying, you know, there are what you might call pragmatic benefits, and if you consider pragmatism as benefiting the human species. Yes, there are some pragmatic benefits to wetlands and these natural areas. They do serve a flood.
Amelioration.
I was starting to stumble over it. Thank you. They ameliorate the floodwaters. First of all, you generally don't care about where the floodwaters go as long as they're not in your house.
Yeah.
So an area that is undeveloped, if the floodwaters go out of the banks in an area where there are no human habitations or no human structures, you're likely to say, okay, that's fine. And of course, by doing so, this is an area where it does not do any insurance damage. There are no insurance claims. And actually, probably the air, the wildlife in that area has basically evolved over time towards actually coexisting with a certain flooding regimen as well.
So it acts sort of as a detention area as it is. It's a sponge.
A sponge, a detention. If it's prairie, it has prairies in some prairie areas, although they're hard to very hard to find around here, except maybe the Katy Prairie, which is in the upper parts of the watershed. The prairies act as a wonderful sponge for floodwaters. The marshes that are closer to the coast, of course, have strong economic benefits with respect to fisheries. But if you're looking in the Houston area, our prairies that are close, that are in the, some of the, for example, the Buffalo Bayou and partially in the Braes Bayou watershed serve wonderful flood amelioration functions. They act as sponges, or else they simply are areas where floodwaters can go and do no damage.
Now, it's also worth noting that green spaces serve an atmospheric function. They absorb carbon. They absorb heat. They convert energy to food. And it has been proven through many studies that green space cools the surrounding areas.
Yes.
So it's, I mean, pavement is a heat sink. Asphalt is a heat sink. Buildings are heat sinks. Green space cools.
Actually, all you have to do is look at the winter is coming upon us, and in the middle of the city, it's always a bit warmer than out just right outside where there's less pavement.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
So I guess we've talked a little about that demonstration project. What is the special concern for this particular 1.5 mile segment of Buffalo Bayou that's around Memorial Park?
Well, there's a few things that are of concern. Of course, the Sabine to Shepherd stretch has is the area closer to downtown. In the past decades, it has already been, you know, rather strongly modified, more channelization, more sculpting of the banks. The area within Memorial Park is less touched. It is more wild, more natural.
Closer to pristine, if not pristine.
It is not pristine. It is hard to find anything pristine in Houston. And so when sometimes say that, when people will occasionally say that the bayou is no longer natural, they are in part saying, first of all, it's no longer natural because certainly there has been modifications everywhere. Even Memorial Park in ages past was Camp Logan at one point. And if you're looking at this area, though, it is still, it is many cases recovered. It is somewhat some restoration. It is still public land that is very important, both for the public as a place to get away from it all and a place for habitat. One of the other thing I think that are things that are of concern, where people may not say it's not natural, is because attics and Barker have impacted the
bayou.
You're
talking about the dams.
The dams, yes, and the reservoirs behind the dams. The management of rainfall events basically has changed the flow regime of Buffalo Bayou permanently. So as long as we're going to have the reservoirs up there, there are significant changes to Buffalo Bayou that we're going to have to allow for, and that has allowed for additional erosion with the way that we have had to manage some of the flood flow, some of the releases from the dam. But that is something that has to be considered in doing any type of flood management or erosion control within Memorial Park. But it should not be used as a reason to have basically wholesale reworking of the bayou within the park.
We're going to be talking about a project that's being examined further west over by Highway 6 and the West Park Toll Road. So I think that's the point where Attucks and Barker might become more relevant because they're geographically closer in relation.
Well, actually,
let me just say first,
that's not quite right.
Okay, we can end on that for the moment. I want to do a station ID. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig. You're listening to KPFT. You're listening to KPFT 90.1. Sooner or later, I'll get this thing right. Okay, so let's hold off on my imprecision regarding the dams. Let's talk a little bit more about the Memorial Park area project first.
Okay.
Now, the Army Corps of Engineers has been doing an examination of the proposed project, And one of the things I think we may want to touch on is that most people have no idea why it's called Memorial Park. It's just a place with a name.
Yes.
Tell us a little about why it's called Memorial Park and how that factored into the Army Corps of Engineers examination of this proposed project.
Well, I first of all do not want to claim in any way that I'm an expert on the archaeology of the park. I think that the Houston Archaeological Society certainly fills that role, and they have been actually an active voice. The Memorial Park in an area called Camp Logan has basically been designated as a Texas state archaeological landmark. And that is because there are remains of the World War One camp, Camp Logan, that are still have foundations, a certain crossing at the across the Buffalo Bayou, and various other archaeological remnants within Memorial Park, and in one place right next to the bayou in one of the areas that would fall under this flood control project. It is very important because, you know, about 100 years ago, next year was the beginning of World War One, and
that's true.
Camp Logan was a major camp.
Let's celebrate.
Yes. Well, I don't know if you want to celebrate
Armistice
the beginning.
Armistice Day, that's the one.
You don't want to celebrate the beginning of the war now.
No, but I had not even thought of that, that we are approaching the 100-year anniversary of the start of the First World War. My Lord, that's
yes.
Amazing. Oh, I feel older already.
Well, you weren't around at the time, so you shouldn't feel too bad.
I wasn't, but when I was born, the distance in time between when I was born and World War One is greater than the distance in time between now and the Vietnam War. So I'm old. Doesn't that, I mean, figure, the Vietnam War ended in, I think it was 73. It's been 40 years since the end of the Vietnam War, and when I was born, it was only like 33 years since the end of the First World War. That's appalling! Anyway. All right. Well, enough about me. So Camp Logan, it was a military staging area for the U.S. Expeditionary Forces going over to Europe. And after the war, it was memorialized.
Yes. Miss Ima Hogg, and not sure how much the rest of the family had to do with it, but was involved with having it set aside as an area, as a memorial.
Was there ever a memorial built, or was it just kind of conceptually memorialized? Is there a memorial in the park anywhere?
I've never seen one.
That's interesting.
For World War, it could be basically, you know, look around you and here is the memorial.
Designated but not really identified.
Right. And so many people may not even realize that it's a memorial to World War One, you know, the war to end all wars.
For a couple of years, anyway.
It
was just an intermission.
It was, unfortunately. But, you know, that's maybe one of the important things.
But the archaeology, we're kind of going astray
because
I'm being glib and snarky. But one of the values that area is considered to have is the archaeology of the camp, which is to say the fact that the camp was there, artifacts left behind
yes.
by the soldiers.
Some foundations.
Whether it's foundations, whether it's parts of uniforms or parts of equipment or coins or belt buckles or perhaps even photos or boxes of personal effects that may have been left behind by soldiers accidentally.
If they were left accidentally in the park, they're gone now. They've deteriorated. But there
one
is...
never knows.
Well, you never know. But however, I have heard that they are thinking of having an exhibition next year. Related to Camp Logan and the park and its importance to the park and why the park is there. I think it is extremely significant that when the Army Corps of Engineers looked at the permit submitted, the permit application submitted by the Flood Control District for the Memorial Park Demonstration Project, and this permit was going to be for a nationwide permit, which was not getting which would basically not be subject to the same amount of public inspection and public comment. When the Corps of Engineers came out with a decision very recently in which they decided whether or not a nationwide permit would be appropriate, the decision was made by the Corps that the Flood Control District would have to apply for an individual permit. instead of a nationwide permit. They decided that the nationwide permit was not appropriate, and in looking at the letter that they put out with their decision, one of the key things they mentioned was the archaeology and the historic significance of Camp Logan in the park. And that in itself basically made this flood control project ineligible to be considered for a nationwide permit. It would have to go for an individual permit. They noted also the high level of public interest, and we know there was a lot of public interest because we had a lot of letters going in and a lot of newsprint. They noted public interest. They noted the environmental issues at stake. But they specifically focused on the situation with the archaeology of the park, and that in itself basically threw it out of the nationwide ballpark and into an individual permit, which basically gives the public an opportunity to speak and to comment.
Let's talk a little about what would be involved in reworking this segment. What are the Sierra Club's and specifically the community's objections to the plan and how they would revegetate the new drainage area?
Well, the first thing before you revegetate is what changes are you making to the
Correct.
Channel itself? And the Sierra Club and those others that we are allied with have, first of all, concerns about the cutting and filling of some of the banks. First of all, it has to be acknowledged that there are erosion problems, some significant erosion problems in this stretch. And a good part of the erosion problems can be laid at the door of perhaps one thing, perhaps improper land management, basically removing vegetation on the part of some landowners. And a second thing, which basically harks back to the releases of waters from behind Attucks and Barker dams, is that when you have long-term sustained releases of water from upstream, basically, that saturates the banks. It can saturate it over weeks at a time as the releases continue if the water is high behind the dam. That saturates it. And then when the water releases finally end, everything is saturated. What happens then is that the lower part of a high bank, which is saturated with water, starts to crumble. And when it crumbles, what's on top crumbles down on top of it.
Essentially, we're talking about miniature landslides.
That is correct. And that is certainly an erosion problem, not only for the sediment that is introduced into the water, but of course it is damaging to the vegetation, and you basically have an unvegetated slope. Now, we do have those problems along the bayou, and they do need attention. But the remedy that has been put forward at this point by the Flood Control District would involve basically either cutting and filling 80% of the length, the linear feet of the bayou in that stretch. Only 20% would be untouched. We would like to see a better remedy in which we start moving the pendulum back the other way so that you do not have as high a proportion basically being having the vegetation removed. Because if you want something to restore something, it is much easier to restore it if it has an area that is surrounded where it has not already been completely disturbed. So
what in the view of the Sierra Club and these other groups, what might be an alternative remedy? I mean, obviously, they need to move water.
They do need to move water. There is going to have to be some work done on the banks, but we would like it to be focused on areas where there are known erosion problems. We also have an issue with an area where they want to realign one of the major bends or meanders of the bayou and cut across and then fill in the old meander. That is a very big issue with us. We would prefer that they consider, have so much focus on erosion control. We do acknowledge that the method that they are proposing probably would maximize a reduction in the amount of sediment going into the bayou. if you focus clearly on just one aspect of the environment, we're going to minimize erosion. Maybe that's the best way to go. But there has to be some balance, not only with reducing erosion, but to preserving the habitat that is also there. And we believe that by actually looking at, instead of just thinking of the bayou as a place to reduce erosion, but looking at it also as a place where there are erosion problems, but which is surrounded by very high quality habitat, they would do less bank disturbance and actually more erosion control in the areas that are suffering most obviously from erosion.
So in a sense, what we're talking about is fixing areas that are broken,
yes,
either because of prior human interference or just because of nature taking its course in the terms of erosion and sediment. Because erosion and sediment, what that means is filling the bayous, which,
yes,
raises the water level, which is the opposite of what you want.
Well, you'd have to remove the sediment because it downstream.
You dredge.
Yes.
Essentially, you dredge.
Right.
So we're talking about working on areas that need work because,
yes,
of erosion. So there's already a reduction in vegetation, a reduction in water flow, an increase in debris, a reduction in root mass to hold the soil together. All those,
yes,
things have already occurred. We might,
yes,
as well work on that.
And we have to work on that.
And in the areas where essentially you have a small, healthy biosystem, where you have vegetation that contributes to cleaning the air, cooling the surrounding area, acting as habitat. It's worth noting that when you reduce habitat and you reduce birds, you get more insects. We don't need more insects. I noticed this once in a subdivision many, many years ago when I walked, uh-huh, in. They had just raised the area. This is like 1978. Mm-hmm. They had just flattened the area, built a subdivision with 1,200 homes, planted little saplings, one in front of each house.
Right.
And I remember for the first few years, until the trees began to grow and provide a place for birds who wanted to visit, we literally had a plague of insects, grasshoppers and other things. Literally, you would walk and just clouds of them would move out of your way because there was nothing to hunt them. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's always been an example of when you create an imbalance, there is an unintended consequence. So habitat is more than just pretty. It
yes,
serves the neighborhood.
Well, yeah, basically, that's the difference between basically landscaping and habitat. Landscaping is something that's pretty and green, and the habitat is something that might be a bit more wilder, but by far much more diverse.
It's a different aesthetic, but at least equally, if not more useful, to humanity and the environment.
I think that what we are trying to propose for this segment is that we basically have stronger soil bioengineering techniques. We do understand, you know, in looking at the plans from the flood control district, that they are looking at not only at using what they is called fluvial geomorphology.
Oh my God. So you want to say it slower and define it.
Fluvial geomorphology, and I think we're going to start going down a rabbit trail. Basically, it's going to be the bends of the bayou so that you are going to have a more stable stream is what they're looking at. But what is more important to us is the amount of soil bioengineering.
I learned so many words from you.
Soil bioengineering, that's one of the most important ones. And this segment of Buffalo Bayou is a very strong candidate for some very strong, sophisticated soil bioengineering techniques. We did bring in Robin Sotir to speak to people on September the 11th, and we are continuing to work with her. I'm hoping we're going to get some more information from her in the next week or so in looking at the types of techniques that would actually be strong enough to handle some of the rather severe erosion we have along Buffalo Bayou. There are areas where it is one-to-one, slopes are almost vertical. And from what we have learned from her in the past, her opinion is that the soil bioengineering techniques being proposed by the Flood Control District are not sophisticated enough to actually handle that degree of erosion. And that is why we want to be able to not only criticize what the Flood Control District is proposing, but to also suggest a better way. It's not like every last thing they are proposing is bad. They have actually made tremendous strides over their old trapezoidal concrete line ditch. This, what they have proposed, even though we are criticizing it, is certainly better than if you go along Bray's Bayou and you look at the trapezoidal concrete line ditch.
Yeah, it's hardly aesthetic.
It hasn't
been terribly effective as the years have gone by. There were some catastrophic floods down in that part of town a few years ago. Let me do a quick station ID.
Sure.
You're listening to KPFT 90.1. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig, and today I'm talking to Evelyn Merz, the Conservation Committee Chair of the Houston Regional Chapter of the Sierra Club. And while we're on, do you want to give a website where they can get a little bit more information? I have links on my blog, but let's give it over the radio.
You can go to our Sierra Club website. It is houston.sierraclub.org, www.houston.sierraclub.org, and you will see links there where you can read more about this project, and we do have a Dropbox with some of the documents as well.
And again, if you go to thinkwing.com and go to the blog page and find the entry for this show, I do have a number of links, including that one, and several others, including the one relating to the project further west, which I think we're going to start touching on shortly.
Right.
So do visit the blog. Do check out the various links. There is a petition there if you're interested, having to do with Terry Hershey Park at Eldridge and I-10, which we're going to be talking about in just a moment.
Mm-hmm.
Just to finish up on the Memorial Park area, the Camp Logan Memorial Park question, one of the issues that I believe concerned individuals have is not just about whether they're going to be straightening out some meanders or digging ditches, but the question is, do they have a plan for revegetating the area, and will that plan happen? That is an interesting kind of angle.
It is. And, you know, the flood control district is, you know, has a great many, is, you know, is largely populated by engineers. They do have environmental services, and there are people who do have an interest in revegetating the bayous. But the problem is that revegetation or restoration, especially we would want restoration within Memorial Park, is not a turnkey thing. You don't go in, plant a few trees, hydroseed some Bermuda grass, and then have a 1 or 2 year watering contract and walk away. And presto chango, it is restored, it is revegetated. Well, it might be revegetated. You might have a Bermuda grass lined channel with invasive species in there and a few faltering trees. But that is not restoration. That is not what anyone wants in Memorial Park. We actually shouldn't have it on our other bayous either, except that's what we have. The true restoration actually takes a bigger budget. It can have a budget, a timeline of 10 years or more, because
stuff only grows so fast.
It only grows so fast, and let's face it, once you have disturbed an area, you have made it a very opportunistic situation for invasives to take over. If ever you look at an area that has been disturbed in some area, they are the ones that are most open to being repopulated by invasive species.
Well, you always have, whenever an area is disturbed, you always have first generation rehabilitation of species, and then second generation and third generation. You can see it on beaches. You can see it on restored open pit mines where the ground has been just totally destroyed and soil has been replaced by debris. And it's
subsoil.
Subsoil. It's a really tough thing for the kind of vegetation humans favor to take hold again. And I think you had said that there was a hope on the part of the flood control district that there would be some private monies donated to this, and there's like maybe not.
Well, at this point, you know, the project which was originally planned to be a $6 million project was going to be one third funded by flood control, $2 million, a third by the River Oaks Country Club, and a third by the City of Houston. And of course, this does run through Memorial Park, and there may have been some hope that some of the TERS 16 money, since the Memorial Park was incorporated, added to the boundaries of the TERS 16. You know, there might be some money there. But the problem is, I don't think that there is acknowledgement at this point. There might be in the future, that the conventional, the traditional way of revegetating a disturbed bayou is adequate for this area, because traditionally there is hydroseeding of Bermuda, which is basically a desert. It is not a native grass. It is supposedly meant to be the first covering of the bayou, but it is actually miserable as a habitat.
It's actually a weed that humans have decided is a landscape grass.
It is, but well, it's actually cheap. It's very cheap. You can hydroseed it, which means you sort of basically blast it out there with essentially like a hose or a sprayer, and it germinates in about 1 to 3 days, and it's instant greening. That doesn't mean that it's good habitat or it's a good choice, or that you don't need to keep on going back with the one species, then you go to the next step. Restoration is done in stages. It is not done within 2 years with grass, plant a few trees, watering contract, and you walk away. And that is what we're afraid of, because not only do you have to have the will to do restoration in the right way, you need a budget for it. And you need a budget.
You need to be able to rely on that budget, which can be a problem over long terms.
And you have to have a budget that stretches out, let's say, for 10 years, not just 2 years, because this is a stepwise situation.
Also, you almost have to escrow that money, because in the political context, you can't rely on a steady flow of funds for anything.
I'm afraid so. And that is what makes it that's why it makes it even more important that you do not completely strip all the vegetation along the banks and say in 50 years it is going to be just right, because we have been told that. You wait 50 years, it'll be okay again. Sorry, I don't have that much faith either, basically the ability of agencies to keep at a particular project for 50 years, or our faith in human ability to predict what the situation is going to be in 50 years.
Yeah, I think I second that emotion. Let's move on a little bit. I think we've kind of talked mm-hmm. about the Memorial Park Buffalo Bayou area. Buffalo Bayou, though, is a really long body of water. So another project that now is coming to the public attention is over in what they call Terry Hershey Park.
Yes.
It is a riparian forest, and I looked that up. Basically, it's a forest that tends to form along the edges of waterways and acts to keep the soil in place. It acts as habitat for land animals and birds, smaller critters, bigger critters.
Shades the water,
cleans the air, cools the neighborhood, mm-hmm. it absorbs carbon, does all these great things, and it's pretty.
Yes.
So what is the project now that they're looking at along the Terry Hershey Park area? What would be the changes, and what are the considered alternatives?
Well, actually, everything is very much up in the air right now, quite frankly. There was a study that came out about 2 years ago called Charting Buffalo, which had what was good about it is that it was looking at the entire stretch of Buffalo Bayou and the situation as it existed, where there were problems, where there were possibilities for detention, you know, places that they were thinking about actually perhaps modifying the bank, so you could see what they were looking at for the whole bayou.
Now let's define the difference between detention and retention and what they're for, because I think that there's a lot of misunderstanding about that. A retention pond, in fact, is kind of a lake. A lot of what people call retention ponds are really detention ponds, which is to say they hold water until it can drain to someplace else.
It's meant to be a temporary
holding area. So the idea here, in terms of the Clodine Ditch, and we're going to talk about the alternatives to that with the park area, etc., but the idea is to create a wider area from an area that's now a fairly low-capacity ditch.
Yes.
Create a wider area where water can flow in and essentially wait without flooding adjacent areas mm-hmm. while the lower capacity ditch at the other end of this detention area takes the water away. So a detention area, mm-hmm. detention pond, detention ditch.
Basin.
We're talking about the water going to a place where it can wait without doing damage and eventually empty.
Yes, it is. The concept is that the water is detained until the peak flood flow has already passed downstream in what will be eventually the receiving bayou or the receiving stream. In this case, it would be Buffalo Bayou would be the receiving stream.
And this water would work its way actually through the Houston area before heading out to the Gulf.
Precisely. And this this Claudine, the Claudine Niche detention basin would basically hold water so that it would not immediately go into the main receiving stream, which would be Buffalo Bayou in this case, and therefore and add additional stress or basic additional stress in a bayou that presumably would be already have already reached its capacity with flood water. And that is the idea, is that you release it after the peak flow has gone downstream, and then you release it and no harm done, and the detention basin has fulfilled its flood management function. And this is, if your basic concern is providing capacity, this is where it comes to a decision. In this particular area, it's around the Briar Grove area of Buffalo Bayou. There is an area of Terry Hershey Park that is has a beautiful riparian forest. But if the riparian forest were removed and the area excavated, they would get it would be less than 300 acre feet of additional capacity. Basically, if you add it'd hold another 300 acre feet.
Acre feet being 1 foot of water over 1 acre of land.
That is correct.
About how many gallons? You have any idea? What does that constitute? Surprise question. Snap quiz.
Okay.
All right. Doesn't matter. But basically,
now I have to look this up when I get home.
If you consider that your average home with like a 60-by-70 lot is something like a sixth of an acre, something like that.
An acre is close to 44,000 square feet.
And I think a lot of single-family homes, as you get into the suburbs, are about 7,000 square feet on that lot. So you're talking about roughly six times. So six of those lots in 1 foot of water, that's an acre foot.
Yes.
So the area that we're looking at, it's a little bit east.
It's south of the Barker Reservoir.
And a little west of Highway 6.
That's correct. And it is north of Beechnut and a little bit to the... It's a little bit south of the Barker Reservoir and just south of the West Park Tollway.
Now, the Barker Reservoir, I think most people would think of as Bear Creek Park. A lot of that area is intended to flood.
There's George Bush. There's the George Bush Park at Barker, and the area of the Attucks is where most people go, which is on the north side of I-10.
Right.
Attucks is on the north side of I-10, and Barker is on the south side of I-10. But they both are basically hold waters that
they're detention ponds.
Yes. Well, they're big
ponds.
Well, okay.
Almost like detention reservoirs.
Well, it's a reservoir.
Yeah.
Right. And it does hold, and actually when the dam is closed, this prevents water, which normally would go into Buffalo Bayou, from going into Buffalo Bayou until the Corps of Engineers basically then opens the gates and releases the waters behind those dams at an arranged flow rate. It could be a maximum now of 4,000 CFS, cubic feet per second, or 4,100 or even more. But, of course, it could be less than that.
Yeah, it really, there are a lot of variables there in terms of what they can release versus sometimes what they must release,
and
even if it might do damage further downstream, which is another issue about reinforcing, maybe enlarging the reservoir areas to the extent possible.
Well, the problem of enlarging the reservoirs is that you might have to buy up some houses to do that. Years and years ago, I spoke with the colonel at the Galveston District, and we spoke a bit about the Attucks Reservoir, and he said that when they were originally designed, the plan was to actually acquire more land than they had at the time so that they could expand the reservoir. Congress never appropriated the money for that acquisition.
And thank goodness we have no zoning.
Well, that wasn't necessarily a zoning question. I don't think people even thought about
zoning.
Well,
it could have been a land reserve.
It could have been, but people didn't think that way.
No, they still don't.
And so that area, which, you know, was basically sort of a little bit fuzzy out there, this is what we're going to acquire to be able to expand the reservoir. Well, there's houses on it now. Mm. So you do have, you know, it's basically getting to the point where we're boxing ourselves in with the reservoirs. And by the way, I wanted to just make a note. There are supposed to be some meetings next spring, 2014, that are being called. They're going to be called by the Army Corps of Engineers about their plans for Attucks and Barker for long-term repair.
Do you have any links to that?
I don't even know when the date is yet. I happen to hear about it. But
if you can find links to it, I'll post it with the announcement for this show.
I may not get it for another month or so, but just I wanted to have people be
Whatever.
Aware there's going to be some public meetings called by the Army Corps of Engineers on Attucks and Barker next spring.
Where might they find announcements of that?
Probably they will be put out by the Army Corps of Engineers, and then, of course, once we do learn about it, the Sierra Club's going to post it, and I think that we're going to probably do our best to try and get out the word to people, and certainly we'll tell you.
Thank you. So one of the possibilities, I guess, would be to go to the Sierra Club site or the houston.sierraclub.org and maybe get on the mailing list.
We don't have a mailing list, but we always have a website.
Okay, you should have a mailing list.
Well,
talk to somebody.
We have a Facebook page too.
Yeah, but people, you know, that's too active. People need something a little more passive to just remind them. That's why they have like vibrators on smartphones to go, "Oh yeah, I should have remembered that." You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on KPFT 90.1. My guest today is Evelyn Merz. She's been really very understanding of the various idiosyncrasies that seem to go along with doing this show. She is the Conservation Committee Chair of the Houston Regional Chapter of the Sierra Club. We're talking about flood control generally, mostly around the Buffalo Bayou and in two specific areas, one in the Memorial Park area and one out by the Barker Dam area.
That's correct.
So what are they talking about doing in this Terry Hershey Park area? What is it that the neighborhood really finds objectionable, and what are the alternatives being proposed?
Well, the neighborhood does find it objectionable that the riparian forest would be removed. They highly object to that, because I'm sure one of the reasons that they enjoy living out there is because of the beautiful riparian forest next to Buffalo Bayou.
Actually, I read a couple of comments on the petition that they have available mm-hmm. to sign at their website, where a couple of people said they specifically bought their houses in
yes.
that area because they had this semi-wild park mm-hmm. area with a lot of wildlife and trails, and it's just a lovely place to be.
It
and
is.
Near.
I've walked it along with some of the neighborhood residents, and I can see why they love it and why they're so concerned about its potential loss. That is.
I have a link to the petition, by the way.
Oh, yes.
That's
wonderful. Yes, I was sending out notices on Monday. I guess the situation right now is that this was, of course, the first option that the Flood Control District was looking at about 2 years ago. And the neighborhood was up in arms, and they managed to basically have the proposal withdrawn. And they thought, you know, they were waiting for basically a reworking of it or other proposals. What they had proposed was using what is known as the Clodine Ditch and having detention along the Clodine Ditch instead of having detention excavated in the riparian forest in the Terry Hershey Park area on the bayou. Basically, instead of detention here on the bayou, let's have detention over here on the Clodine Ditch, and which does then flow into Buffalo Bayou.
Essentially, it's taking a low-capacity waterway and turning it into a bypass with a higher capacity in order to not have to disturb the park, going
right.
around the park. But the park would still carry some water, but most of it would go around.
Well, actually, Terry Hershey Park is on the banks of Buffalo Bayou. It's always going to be carrying water.
Exactly.
Absolutely always, and no matter what we did with respect to detention. The idea is that we have to have additional capacity in the watershed somewhere else. And this is what the neighborhood was proposing, is that detention, instead of being put right on the bayou, by expanding basically widening the bayou by excavating out parts of Terry Hershey Park, instead put
which it would on, destroy habitat,
absolutely.
And then you get into this whole restoration thing, which is never entirely adequate and takes half a century to happen if it happens at all.
The half a century is getting on the low end from what I've seen on some things, is actually putting it somewhere else in an area that has already been highly disturbed. Well, their hope, I think, was to have a study done on the feasibility of constructing the detention basin at the Claudine Ditch. Now, what happened at the Commissioner's Court yesterday is that a vote was taken by the commissioners to have a $250,000 study done of this area at Terry Hershey Park in the neighborhood on Buffalo Bayou, with respect to the trees, and which is the area that was proposed to be excavated. Now, the people in the neighborhood were blindsided by this. I was surprised too. They found out about it on Friday. I learned about it on Monday.
Transparency in government is a great thing. I wish we had some.
And there were a number of people. The folks had over 1,000 names on a petition asking the commissioners not to appropriate this $250,000 for the study. I think they would have preferred that a study be done of the Claudine Ditch detention basin option instead. But apparently they are trying to get – there is so much up in the air and so much surprise. There is, I think, surprise is the greatest emotion that people are feeling over there, and disappointment that they found out about this and that they feel blindsided, obviously. If you find out something on a Friday and the meeting to approve the appropriation is on Tuesday, it doesn't leave you much time.
Well, as Rachel Maddow says, late Friday is always news dump day. That's the stuff they really don't want people to notice, because it comes out late Friday and people are doing their weekends and it's like magic Monday and it's already past the news cycle and maybe you won't notice. That's unfortunately the way these things work. So this $250,000 study, I don't think
it was appropriated.
It was appropriated.
It was
okay.
Appropriated, but I think that doesn't mean it's the end of the story, because of course that's not the same as moving dirt, as cutting down trees, as actually doing something on the ground, but is one of the first steps towards choosing option A, the one that would destroy the riparian forest, versus option B, which is the Claudine Ditch detention basin.
By the way, I do have the link to a definition of riparian forest on my website as well, just for
That's good.
Because I'm like that. So this particular study, it will not look in the context of the riparian forest area and the Claudine Ditch as sort of alternative
A and B. Only is looking at A, which in this case is the area that is proposed to have the forest removed right next to Buffalo Bayou.
So they've made it a situation where it's a yes or no versus an either or.
We don't. I'm not sure exactly what their thinking is, but basically, if you were a resident there, first of all, wouldn't you prefer that the $250,000 was used to examine the feasibility of the Claudine Ditch detention? Or if you couldn't get that, wouldn't you rather have them actually analyze both of them instead of just the one that you hated?
Yes, you would want them to look at the context,
right,
and see if A or B or a mixture of A and B in some way is the ideal solution.
And why?
And how?
Exactly, and that is what is apparently not being done now. So people there are not going to give up. They are, I think, they're regrouping, they're looking at their options, but it is something which shows how vulnerable the bayous are to multiple projects that could be happening simultaneously and sometimes without the best of public knowledge.
You know, I think I might start to wrap this up by saying elections have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that you elect to make these decisions, whether they make them well or badly, whether they make them openly or announce them in a Friday night news dump, this is the kind of consequence that elections have. So the people in that area, I mean, I'm not going to say anything against the people in the Briar Forest area, but, you know, people elected Steve Raddick. So they elected their county commissioner, and now this is what their county commissioner does. There are always alternatives. Elections have consequences. This is ThinkWing Radio with Mike Honig. I have been here with Evelyn Merz, Conservation Committee Chair of the Houston Regional Chapter of the Sierra Club. I will, as Lauren says, give you the last word if there is anything you would like to say to wrap up the show.
Well, I really enjoyed this riparian entertainment.
I have the definition. Let's see. Where did I see it? Here we go. According to Wikipedia, a riparian zone or riparian area is the interface between land and a river or stream. It is also the proper nomenclature for one of 15 terrestrial biomes of the Earth. You can click on the link. There's a little bit more to that. But, you know, I try to inform, and I had to look it up, so I have to assume other people going, riparian? Okay, I thank Evelyn for being so tolerant, accepting, and understanding of the idiosyncrasies of being on this show with me. Again, this is ThinkWing Radio with Mike Honig. You can go to the website at thinkwingradio.com. I have a shorter version called thinkwing.org. It'll take you to the same place. Show announcements and links for a show like this are going to be on the blog side. There's also an archive for past shows. I thank you for listening. I hope that if you haven't heard the whole show, you'll listen to it online on demand. I usually eventually post it on my site. And remember, slower traffic, keep right. It's not just a good idea. Honest to gosh, it's the law. All right, see you next week.
All right, folks, that was Growing Up in America. Bob Sanborn is standing over me. Folks, that was ThinkWing Radio. And it was an oldie but goodie about the Sierra Club and everything that they're getting done. And, of course, we're going to have a follow-up because so many people called and said, you know what? That stuff is old. Those things have changed. See, in a matter of years, of course, things will change in a way where either things that have been talked about will fall apart, or we have something new that has fixed all of the problems that we had. But of course, the problems that we have will never be fixed. It's kind of the way the system works. But folks, we definitely will be back with Mike Honig and give you more information on the things that matter. This has been KPFT 90.1 with ThinkWing Radio with Mike Honig.
KPFT's local station board meeting will be held on the second Wednesday of the month at the Montrose Center. That's 401 Brainerd Street, Houston, Texas, 77006. Public comment will be available from 8 to 8:30. Meetings of Pacifica Foundation's Radio Board of Directors and all of its standing committees are open to the public at kpftx.org. If a meeting was closed to the public, an explanation of the reason for closing will appear in the meeting's archive entry. You are listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Most of us like to be out of the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equals healthy fun in the sun. Visit fda.gov/sunscreen for more information. A message from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.